This is Lena Life. I'm Lena Mirmont. I'm bringing you back to my show with a very special edition. We are having Mark Barondess, who is probably one of the most celebrated America's lawyer. And I believe that he is almost like a global magnet who attracts the laws of human nature. Mark was is the author of most fundamental, extraordinarily powerful book, which doesn't limit itself just to the law. It spreads its wings, ideas, thoughts, life rules, to just about every possible area of life. And the name of this book is What Were You Thinking? And since our first interview, Mark, I was thinking a lot, and I can feel that most of us are thinking much more, especially after reading your book. So this is time for me to introduce you, to thank you for rejoining us, and to welcome you to our show. Here is Mark Barondess.
Well, it's my pleasure to be with you, Lena.
I like to start by saying that we're going to have discussion not only about your book, but hopefully we will have enough time to talk about your other writing. I was deeply taken by your Huffington's publications regarding the digital murder of your ex, your thoughts on the custody, and I believe it's very well and harmoniously incorporated with ideas which are part of your book. So my first question probably has to do with a general feeling and general ideas. How do you feel today about your book compared to the time when you wrote it?
Well, I think that it's just as important today as the day that I wrote it. The advice that I try to impart in the book is really timeless in its nature, and I think that people, no matter who you are or at what point in life you're coming across the book, it's still relevant and provides a great deal of information that is helpful.
And this is Lena Life with my apology for technical obstacles which unfortunately disconnected us. I like to start almost from the beginning, and primarily I like to express my tremendous gratitude for Mark Barondess, who is our very, very noble guest, to come back. And I wanted to tell you all that in addition of his tremendous establishment and role as one of the best American lawyers, I'm feeling that he is almost like a global magnet. That's words I came across after I understood and felt that his power to attract and to exemplify the laws of human nature just unparalleled to anything or to anyone. Mark, welcome. And I like to start saying that in addition to your book, I like to speak about your other writings, as I mentioned before our break, because I was quite moved by your few articles in the Huffington newspaper, which had to do with the digital murder of your ex and some thoughts regarding custody. But that we will touch as we go, talking about your book and also talking about your organization, which called We Are Family. So we have a circles of ideas, and I like to start just like you suggested in your book. And you said, pull up a seat and let's have a conversation. And I will use another very charming addition to that, to have a laugh a little and learn a lot. Mark, welcome. And I will start from my first question, which has to do with the changes in times, experiences since you wrote the book, and the time which we're talking now. How do you feel about the dynamic of it?
Well, I think, Lena, that the book remains as relevant today as it was the day that I wrote it. It's hard to believe that it was, almost 8 years ago that I wrote the book. But the advice that's provided in the book remains clear, cogent, and applicable to all of us as humans, especially those that are going through the differences between marriage and divorce.
I like to start from really beginning and to comment on the way you express your gratitude to the people who made a tremendous impact in your life. We all know that this is a part of writing. You always have to acknowledge people who've been a direct or indirect participant and influence. But I found that in your case, the gratitude which you expressed had profoundly sincere passion. You addressed in a very individual way appreciating every member of your family. Frankly, I felt that I almost met them a little bit. You certainly described the role of your father in your life, your mother, your extraordinarily beautiful wife, and your children. I like how you comment on your children with your present marriage and your previous marriage. Not only you did not forget anyone, but you gave a very special recognition for each of them.
Well, each one of these people are individuals that have impacted my life. I mean, they have made me who I am.
And that is such a generous, sincere recognition of that. And perhaps my first question would be, how do you connect with your personal experience, having literally blessing with your own family who created such a power of your nest, with the world outside, with its brutality, with its reality, with you forming yourself as a very brave, very aggressive lawyer? How those two personal inside world connects to the outside world?
Well, I really think they're the same. I mean, I don't differentiate my activities between personal and business in terms of who I am as a person. I am who I am, and as I said, each one of these individuals has touched my life and has made my life and has made me who I am today. I think it would be wrong to have a different set of values or opinions in a professional setting versus in a personal setting. I mean, I am the same person in both settings, and each one of these people have impacted me and continue to impact me each and every day.
And be perfectly truthful, this is not a common practice today. It is something which profoundly disturbs me when children have learned behavior rules and adults have to subscribe to their business dress, whether it's a look of success or some other well-known formulas. I certainly admire you for having this invisible bridge between personal and private, and I guess that would be a natural connection to your one of your major points in the book regarding divorce. It's really makes extraordinary explosion in a relationship of people. You give very straightforward advice, yet again, it fills with the understanding, with the passion, and a fair amount of a psychology. And even though in a few sections of your book you're suggesting separating behavior with your lawyer and leaving certain things for your therapist, those things really are coming together because human nature, as you absolutely correctly pointed, is inseparable. So let me ask you to walk us through divorce, where I would include a decision about choosing the lawyer and some other thoughts which you put in your book.
Well, I mean, the decision about getting a divorce is a very difficult decision. I just had a woman call me just yesterday. She's involved in a marriage of 20-plus years, and it turns out that her husband has been having an affair, and she learned about it not through her husband, but through her children. Her children knew about it before she knew about it. And it's a very difficult situation that she's faced with. And as she goes through life and deals with this situation, it's going to be very difficult and painful for her. But nonetheless, she needs to have the advice of a lawyer. And in that particular case, I also encourage her very strongly to see a mental health professional, because while a lawyer does cross over and provide a great deal of advice in terms of the social scheme, these are very difficult traumas that individuals are facing. And I think it's very important that individuals obtain the benefit of the advice of medical professionals or psychological professionals so that they can hopefully deal with the situation with the least amount of trauma as is possible.
In a second, we will talk about the children, which you just mentioned, which particularly gives me a tremendous sense of grief. I'm not alone with this, and as much as common sense, moral sense suggests to spare children from one of the worst break in between the parents, it is not avoidable. Before that, however, I like to bring that thought, such a truth into it, where you're saying that divorce can unhinge a person to the point where they will behave in ways they previously never even dreamed they could. And that I'm taking it directly from your book. Incidentally, I have to tell you that, of course, the objectivity, striking objectivity in your book certainly makes one very much to think about his and her situation. The way you write, it's absolutely beautiful, because I call it almost like a sub-rhythm being a musician, because you do leave a space for our own thoughts, for our own doubts, and that is something I particularly feel is extremely powerful in your book, because yes, it is guide, it's an instruction, it's a power of wisdom, but it is also addressing every each individual. Coming back to my question about the children, you just almost read my mind. What a tragedy on the part of this lady who already faced with two issues, her divorce and her children. There are no laws, really, can create provision, how to spare children from such a trauma. And you refer this to your in your book number of times, and perhaps I can jump and talk about your article about custody thoughts. What are your thoughts on this? And I like to go over those thoughts, and obviously for my listeners to read it after you will walk us through your thoughts.
Well, my general thought is that parents going through a divorce have to realize that the children are being impacted as much as them, if not more, by the actions of parents that are going through the divorce. The kids really have no role or decision-making in terms of what is going on with their parents, and they are just, they're bystanders that get caught up in the drama and in the trauma of a divorce. I think parents have to remember that the children are not possessions. They're not objects that are should be used as leverage in order to obtain a more beneficial financial settlement or some other non-economic settlement in their favor. The children have to be cared for and have to understand, and the parents need to understand, that whatever the parents do during the course of a divorce will have an impact on the children for the rest of their lives. It will shape who they are as individuals. It will shape their own marriages when they take place. Kids are like sponges. They absorb everything that goes on during the course of a divorce. And if the parents are not careful, children are easily poisoned and can be easily harmed.
And then, of course, there is a chain and consecutive repetition possible on their behavior. And it's very hard to bring to the reality and make those children to be aware that whatever parents did, no matter how painful that is, how wrong that is, it's not a model for their own behavior. I personally feel that there should be a superbly refined laws which are protecting children, but unfortunately, very immature behavior on the part of the parents often preventing from those laws being implemented. If we can go, let's say, in a specific, are there any provision, for example, to spare children from the courtroom? Are there any certain technical demands where children need to give their feedbacks, or they can be indeed divorced from the courtroom?
Well, I think that it really depends on the individual family dynamic. I mean, each family is the same in certain ways in terms of they're going through the same system, the same process, but how that process affects the individuals and the children in each family unit is entirely different. Some children have the maturity and the age and the ability to be able to articulate what things would be better for them in terms of the context of the parent-child relationship, who they should live with, who they should not live with, why. And these are things that if the child is of a certain maturity, that a court would be well-suited to find out that information and then hopefully be guided by the input of that information and making a decision about the care and custody of the children. Other kids are very manipulative and see how they can play one parent against the other parent to get what they want. You see this many times with teens, and you also see it with remarkably young children as well. Kids are very savvy and smart, and they know what to say and what to do in order to get what they want. So a court has to acknowledge that those feelings and those processes can take place, but still needs to proceed in a manner such that the best interests of those children will eventually be handled and taken into consideration.
This is something very, very profound, and I think it also leads to certain negative thing which is in internet, because children today can get an additional input from the internet. They can get certain information even about their parents, which, for example, they couldn't get 10, 15 years ago. So that makes the whole court system even more complex, and I believe that also witness stand, so to speak, now has a chair in the form of the internet. And I believe that no one could write better than actually you did about the resourcefulness of an internet in your chapter, High Tech Love. I hope that I'm saying this correctly.
You are.
Okay. To be perfectly honest with you, I didn't mention this first time when we spoke, but the title made me think of totally different things. I thought that you're talking about some kind of a new progressive way of using love as a form of expression, and I somehow tried to connect technical aspect with an emotional aspect, but I really made it so complicated when indeed you are talking about extremely harsh reality. In fact, when I read it, I frankly forgot that it is written by the lawyer. I felt that it is written by tremendously passionate, as I said in the beginning, human being who is devoted with no reservation to the cause of human nature, human behavior. And you are helping with information which you are supplying there to so many, because, of course, infidelity is one of major fruit in our diet today, unfortunately. So I will...
I heard an interesting statistic the other day. I can't remember what the source of it was, but it was something to the effect that in America now, one in every five divorce filings contains some reference to Facebook. So it is clear that the role of high tech and of the internet and social media has played a very important part in marriages and in divorces, and it will continue to be that.
Unfortunately, I feel that, if to go a little bit on the side, it's a subject of a great sadness as well, because along with this availability to determine infidelity, and you go into absolutely microscopical detail with the links, with the suggestion how to orient yourself on the internet to prove the infidelity. I believe that the client can become his own lawyer and submit all kinds of information and proof without even asking lawyer to do so, because it's there on the internet. I feel very sad, just to go a little bit aside, that because of internet, we truly lost respect for our emotional privacy, respect for certain unavoidable quiet corners, which every human needs to have. And we just have to compromise, and we have to realize that statistic which you just brought up is so stunningly high that indeed we must use internet as a tool, but it's not always becoming a helpful tool. It is it's becoming a very terrible tool. And if you do not mind, I like to go into your article, because I was thinking, since we are talking about infidelity and painful issues in marriage, I like to speak for a moment about one of the more recent articles, I would say, compared to your book, which has to do with the digital murder of your ex. If you kindly can tell us about this and how really treacherous internet is.
Well, the point of that article, which was done for the Huffington Post, was that in today's day and age, a scorned spouse can take actions that are really reprehensible, things that were often known only between a husband and a wife. Are now capable of being disseminated to the entire world via social media. And I have seen, unfortunately, too many cases where information which is just extremely damning is disseminated over the internet to cause pain and just dramatic consequences to an opposing spouse. And I think we have to be aware of that, that is taking place, and that in this day and age, it's something that unfortunately is going to continue. And it is a very, very vicious type of conduct that scorned spouses have been employing.
And again, if we talk about children who are so, so resourceful with an internet, that damage is so, so difficult to overcome because, of course, they are discussing this with their friends. And internet becomes like a live person. It's very conveniently serving children because they can hide in one sense, and yet it's a tremendous communicating tool. And that, in a sense, I feel being an educator, that takes away truly a childhood from the child. And the way you wrote about this in the book In Your Own Rights, I truly felt that this is one of the most critical challenge we have as an adult, because education just in itself cannot be a substitution for children's pain, misinformation. And I feel that one of the things which you succeeded in your book is connection between generations and the marriage, which is a small nest for this connection, is beautifully explained in your book in so many ways and forms, in its differences, in these conflicts. I will allow myself and bring one thought by Dave Muir. I came across, because your book made me think of so many different ideas, some philosophical, perhaps, more than a practical. And that thought came across, so I like to say it, actually. I took it down, so I like to read it.
Sure.
A great marriage is not when the perfect couple comes together. It is when imperfect couple learns to enjoy their differences. And I found that way you're so scrupulously describing the differences, which brings me to the huge section of your book where you are dedicating the great part of your book to the stories of very famous people, but not only by their financial wealth, but by their role in a society, by their legendary mission. I particularly was taken, not that I prefer one to another, they're very, very different. And of course we know Larry King, and of course we connect you with Larry King. When two giants meet and join their minds, it's of course unforgettable impression. Along with that, I was personally taken by the story of Guggenheim family, particularly, to be a little bit modest. Many years ago, I met not then time, but in the future, I should say future, future, I should say, making it very clumsy. I met Mrs. Guggenheim before actually I knew that she is married. And the issue was just a little discussion, and I felt tremendous power and wisdom of this woman. I understood that she either never was married or she just was so devoted to her art and to her collections that that really shaped her vision about the family. And coming to your book, when I found the answer about this personal connection, I understood that marriages have so many different connections, reasons, sometimes impulses. And that was tremendously impressive, because two giants who met each other in a very mature time in their lives actually shared very common, well-known to any human soul thoughts and experiences. My question is, when you met with these people, how did they come across and how you felt about them? I know that you had dinner with them, and I know that you knew them personally. So I'd like to know if I'm an illusion or indeed those giants are also faced with some very natural human issues and thoughts.
Well, just so that your listeners know who we're talking about, Barbara Guggenheim is married to a gentleman by the name of Bert Fields. Bert Fields is a dear friend, and he is probably the greatest entertainment lawyer in Hollywood. He represents people from, going back to the Beatles to Tom Cruise to you name them. At some point, he's probably represented them. The passion that he has for his work, he also throws into his marriage. These are people that are loving, that are kind, that are generous, that are open, that are forgiving, that are understanding. I mean, many of these adjectives are really define the scope of a successful relationship and a successful marriage. And Bert and Barbara certainly have mastered that science. And, I mean, it's just a delight to see and to be around people such as them.
I thank you so much that you shared your personal experience, because even though you are so thoughtful towards your readers, and those stories were expressed in the most natural and trusting way, but coming this from you directly leaves no space for doubts that there is a still goodness exists, that you as an individual have primarily respect for people's quality, their professional role, their legacy in the society. And then, of course, you do appreciate and respect their financial status. But it is very important, especially today, where media really literally destroys the complexity of certain life's individual, especially if it is celebrity, and brings this very simple, primitive form just to create another sensation. It is extremely valuable quality in your book. It makes it truly historic, writing, where people can certainly relate to the individuals who made a tremendous impact. And of course, their path was extremely challenging, very, very difficult. But the fact that you're talking about them in such a high tone
Lena, I have to tell you, one of my favorite essays now in the entire book is the very first one that is in the book, that being the one of Gene Simmons from KISS. Gene spends his entire essay that he wrote for the book saying why individuals should not get married. And I got to tell you, even when he wrote that essay, to me, both him and his then-girlfriend, or live-in girlfriend for 20 years, Shannon Tweed, they were, to me, the epitome of a married couple. Well, despite the fact that he said you should never get married, now I believe Gene's been married happily for 2 years. And he completely flipped on what he said in the book. And I think that deep down inside, he always knew that marriage was for him. And I'm glad that he appears to be as happy as he is right now.
Thank you so much. I was a little backwards. I started from Guggenheim's, maybe because it did serve my musical artistic interest, perhaps. But thank you so much for bringing this up, because that materializes in my next question. And the question is that today, especially when people are dealing with prenuptial agreements with a high wealth, marriage becomes either very cynical, or it becomes most profound, precious commitment. And indeed, your book, again, thank you for bringing this up, clearly makes a difference. This is one of the profoundly important thought book has. What kind of commitment I feel I like to share? Am I going to be still a little single? Am I going to be still a little married? Is it better just to be together and to be a companion without facing these particular colossal problems? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I'm going back again to Gene Simmons, because I remember spending the day with him and Shannon in their home in Beverly Hills, and I watched the two of them interact, and to me, they were nothing but the happiest unmarried couple in Hollywood, California at the time. These are individuals that were clearly in love, and despite the fact that Gene wanted to portray himself as, you know, the ultimate bachelor forever, he was very much in the throes of a deep family commitment, and it showed through. And I think that his concerns that he raised as far as what people should consider in terms of marriage are very important. Ultimately, for him, it turned out that he disregarded everything that he said and got married.
And frankly, that inspired me to make a little parallel, if I may, again, with injection of a little bit of subjectivity, meaning that marriage is a well-known for century formula of people living together, yet it has so many endless interpretations. And I feel that the way you described all possible angles and the problems in your book reminds me a rare music score which been used by very well-known conductors, and they just made their own interpretations, which became as a treasure for human emotions and intellect. I believe that is a score of life, which you displayed so beautifully in your book. I hate for you to see the way your book looks in my hands, because there are so many comments, not in the book itself, but with some ideas, with the thoughts. And I just feel that I cannot change it, but every at least law student should read your book. It is, if not equally, but I should say not less important, but maybe even more important to read this, to feel it through and then apply it to the laws, then their work will be that much more meaningful rather than to learn the laws and then find certain situations in life. As I said, I cannot change it, but at least I hope that with the time, the amount of readers, which are increasing, because there is probably no second book like this, has such a panoramic view from endless amount of human issues to the practical advice and truly wonderful orientation for one who is lost can find his own place.
Well, I have to tell you, you have to stop complimenting me because my hat is popping off of my head right now. You're making my head swell.
I see. Well, I have to tell you, that means that you're a proper musician, because that's how musicians feel when they are performing with a full passion and with a full conviction. But that's exactly how I feel. And I honestly would say that that was a fantastic continuation of a conversation which becomes more and more relevant. In fact, you said it yourself, even though book is only 8 years old, but I think it's already ageless, and I think it needs to be read more and more. I already see different angles in it. I already asking myself what I'm thinking. You do not need to face divorce or marriage. You just have to think. I like to ask my last question regarding your organization, which I probably neglect to ask you last time. It's called We Are Family. Can you tell us about it?
Sure. The We Are Family Foundation is an organization, a nonprofit organization, that was founded in 2001 with my dear friend Nile Rodgers. Nile is a very well-known musical producer and performer. The organization was prompted in the wake of the September 11, 2001 attacks. And basically what we did was we developed an organization, and the mission of the organization is to develop a global family by creating and supporting programs that inspire and educate people about mutual respect, understanding, and appreciation of cultural diversity. And we're doing that in programs that the We Are Family Foundation has developed and has impacted numerous people all around the world. And it's one of the great joys of my life to participate with that organization.
And I just like to conclude by perhaps getting a little bit away from our immediate topic. And firstly, thank you for making such an organization, because I feel that, just to put it in a nutshell and simplifying it, that for the last 20 years, world really was faced up with a tremendous frequency of major historic changes, collapse of Soviet Union, explosion of terrorism. I feel it as a feeling gap because what was collapsed, unification of Europe, at least attempt of that. And, of course, all of that brought tremendous challenge in economy, ideology, and every country follows its own route. And the union of opposites here is such that in one sense we have to respect and try to understand the idiosyncrasies of each country. In another way, we have to communicate. We are forced to start to understand each other more. And in this particular respect, I believe that internet is a fantastic tool, because you can get an information, you can educate yourself, and you certainly can communicate. And particularly after this observation, I wanted profoundly and deeply to thank you for forming such organization, because it just is such an incredibly relevant statement.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I would encourage all of your listeners to visit our website at wearefamilyfoundation.org. It's a wonderful organization. The work that we've done is just amazing. And I think that your listeners would enjoy just reviewing some of the materials on the site.
Certainly will do so. I personally will reconnect. I read biography and accomplishments of people who formed this organization, and somehow we will try to make our modest and sincere contribution to that. I need to remind to our listeners that I had most memorable time with our return guest, Mark Barandes. Names and places which he has changed to its progress, to its enlightenment, and with his tremendous high principles. Mark, I wanted to thank you very much, and I hope it's another wonderful page in some continuation of our discussions.
Well, it's been my pleasure to talk with you, as always, Lena, and I really thank you for helping to raise awareness on not only the issues about the book, but also about the We Are Family Foundation.
Tremendous pleasure and honor. I will wish you absolutely the best, I would say, until soon. And concluding my program, I would again say that this is a tremendous honor for all of us to speak to Mark Barandes. That was Lena Life. I'm Lena Mirmont with my thoughts and wishes to all of you. Thank you for joining. Our next week will be back to medicine. We will be talking to a prominent dentist, and then we will be talking to a very well-established educator, Angela Myers. Until then, with all my best.